The way she killed her. So brutal. Felt gangland. Didn't want it to come down on Brown and Nero. So I told Gemma to use the Chinese.
Good?
Ready.
All right, so welcome to the demi-penultimate? Yes, because there are still two episodes left after this one. So welcome to the semi-semifinals of the series of the Sons of Anarchy, Season 7. This is the Flashcast that is posted by The Incomparable. I am, as usual, Lisa Schmeiser, and with me...
Phil Mozeliak.
Hey.
And Tony Sindelar.
Excellent. Welcome, guys. Welcome. So I have to admit, I haven't really prepared my one-minute recap yet, and I will be doing so frantically while we think of the words, the one word, describe the episode in one word. Pick a word this week.
Tony, you go first. I'm thinking.
I'm not feeling as good about my word, but the word I came up with was disclosure. Because a lot of truths come out in this episode. A lot of people start talking about things that they have known for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So my word was disclosure.
Okay.
A lot of secrets revealed.
I sort of was lying. I wanted to see. I had one in my mind, but I wanted to see what you would say first. I had gravity, meaning, look, everybody, or especially Jax realizes and Gemma realizes the gravity and the weight at which all these things, all these lies now have become to pass, and what's going to happen because of it.
So disclosure is a great one.
I feel bad for Jax.
I don't, but we can get into that for the episode. Oh, my goodness. I guess my word for the week, in an odd way, it was relief. And the reason I felt relief was because we've finally stopped what felt like a season of stalling out and a season of misdirection. And some of the big questions that have been hanging over this whole season have finally been resolved. We know the rat was Borofsky.
I called it.
Yes, you did. You did. Jax now knows that his mom killed his wife incredibly brutally. And we can talk about how and why he decided that was the real story. Unser has a bead on everybody. Nero has a bead on what Gemma is because she told him. There's almost, we now know Lila got her happy ending, so that's done.
So to speak.
Yeah. I don't think we're going to see her again, but I felt there was a sense of a lot of things just being wrapped up, you know, a lot of things being tied in a bow. There's still one big thing they obviously have to deal with, which is the Indian Hills thing. But we've called Daytak Tar out of Indian Hills the Fortinbras of the series, and I think we're going to see that come to pass by the end. So yeah, I felt a great sense of relief while watching this episode. Like it was both giddy and like almost a full body exhale.
Yeah.
As thing after thing happened, and you're just like, oh my God, this is great.
I was just gonna say, I didn't know it was gonna go this far in this episode.
Yeah.
Like I realized we've only got two more, and so you've got to let everything out. But I wasn't expecting everything to start clicking in this episode.
And it did. Oh, my gosh, it did.
This one with the last one, they're really kind of like everything's firing. And I don't think it's like too fast-paced. There's just not a lot of kind of filler scenes in between where, you know, the guys are just hanging out or there's, you know, or more comedic parts that don't advance the plot. It's just it's all plot, right?
Yeah, it's just there's not a wasted minute anymore. And you could probably argue that the first nine episodes and all of the meandering that he did back and forth have led up to this. Or you can argue that really the show could have been pretty tightly edited down and had the same effect. But I've pulled up the handy SOA explainer timer, so let me try in 1 minute to encapsulate what happened in what was arguably the longest episode of Season 7. Although, oh God, we have two left. There's no telling. Like, the season finale is supposed to air on December 9th. I don't think it's going to stop until December 19th. We're going to need to pack in fluids and kind bars to get through it.
That's fine.
Okay, so SOA explainer, ready, and go. Jax has decided to take Abel at his word. He's figured out his mom has killed his wife. Gemma quickly twigs to this. There's a moving goodbye scene with Chucky. There's a moving goodbye scene with Unser, so to speak. There's a fantastic, gut-wrenching breakup scene with Nero. And she goes on the lam because she fears that Jax will kill her. There's a nice scene at the end of the episode where Jax and Nero have a discussion. And Nero's like, I realize that you've killed enough people to populate a small town, but I really don't think you should add your mom to the body pile. Other things we find out. Borofsky's a rat. Lynn is dead. Juice is possibly dead, but he's so far gone around the bend crazy at this point, it doesn't matter anyway. Everyone in the Sons of Anarchy happens to miss Bobby Elvis because he was the only one who could balance the books. Indian Hills is going to gun for Jack's head, especially since it looks like Mayhem might come after him. In short, it's the winding down of Sam Crow.
That was pretty strong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very, I think, concise and complete.
Yeah. It was perhaps like the least bloody episode we've had this season, but it was the most brutal in many ways, I think.
One of the biggest ones, I wasn't expecting Juice to actually kill Lynn. I thought there would be something on the side of that, and it just didn't seem to, like, I just thought, maybe he's going to flip in some way, and everything moved forward.
Yeah, I really liked that he killed him, and I got the feeling that Juice kind of killed him as a sort of apology to the rest of the club.
Yeah.
You know, he knew he wasn't getting out of there alive. I think he realized it at some point. And my sense is, you remember how Clay's, the last few episodes of Clay's plot arc were him wrapping up loose ends and squaring everything in his head, morally speaking, because, like, when he finally died, he was at peace.
Yeah.
I mean, no one else around him was, but Clay felt in his heart of hearts that he had done everything he could to leave what he considered to be a legacy. He was at peace with his actions. He left Gemma in what he thought was a better place, and he balanced the scales. And there was much rejoicing. No, what I was saying was, just as Clay had that whole redemption arc where, you know, he was never going to be like a better man, as it were, but he did manage to clear his own conscience and square everything away between him and Gemma and be at peace with what was coming next. My sense is that this was the episode where Juice finally won a measure of peace. Granted, he won it because he's basically batshit insane. Because we have that crazy great scene with Unser and Althea, where, you know, he starts laughing and he's like, it's too late for everybody, all of the truth has come out now, we're all done, it's burying us all, and he's turned into kind of a mad prophetess, as it were. But in a way, this has also given him a big sense of peace, because now he's no longer trying to juggle all these different factions and secrets. He's realized his life has no value, and so he's free for the first time in God knows how long to say what he wants.
Which he's kind of unprepared to do, so, right? Like, he doesn't really know how to handle that, right? Yeah. Like, Juice has been kind of coloring inside the lines for a long time, and now,
yeah
it turns out, an independent Juice doesn't do so great.
No, he needs adult supervision, yeah, is what he needs.
I thought it was, I mean, we kind of got to see all of these characters dealing with kind of basically some version of grief, and the interesting ways that they you know, dealt with that, and I thought they were all pretty well acted. A lot of really intense scenes.
Mm-hmm. That said, there was only one laugh-out-loud scene in the whole episode for me, and that was when Tig and Chibs are trying to go through the books, and Tig mutters, we gotta patch in another member of the tribe.
Casual biker anti-Semitism.
Yeah, and I realize that's what it is. It's casual biker anti-Semitism, but it's also really effing funny.
So, now, that leads me down the road of, so, was Bobby Jewish?
Yes, it was brought up in the first season, actually.
It was?
Yeah.
Wow. I had no idea.
Yeah, that was something they brought up in seasons 1 and 2, the fact that Bobby was a Jewish and actually had a head for numbers, because his backstory, from what I remember, and the backstory is how they justified him and Luann, his backstory was that his dad was either a bookie or a crooked accountant in Las Vegas. Yeah. So Bobby grew up knowing how to keep double sets of books.
Also, as an Elvis impersonator.
Smart dude who just, made a series of choices where he zigged left instead of right.
I was astonished with Juicy's crying and tearing up. I didn't think, you know, I was hoping he would tell Jax, but honestly, I thought he was going to lie and say that he did it.
Nope. I think he was like, screw it. These people are going to kill me anyway. Yeah. I am just going to.
But for some reason, his son. I have
nothing left to lose.
As soon as Jax talked about Abel, that kind of cut to the heart of it.
Yeah. Well, that was something I found really striking was when you think about anything that's ever motivated Jax, like the whole season was him trying to be a good father to Abel and having basically no direction and realizing he had no direction, right? And then season three, when they take his son, there's that whole wrenching sequence in the Irish market where he's watching the adoptive parents with Abel. And he has this moment where he's like, what can I give my son? Maybe this is the best thing for it. And it shows that if he has a true north as far as his moral compass goes, it's that he desperately wants to be a good father. And, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's, like, actually his tragic flaw, or his, you know, is that he's super smart at being an outlaw, and he's super duper smart at pulling off crime, and he has no idea how to do the one thing he most desperately wants to do in the world, which is to be a good father. So, you know, when he mentions, he has that conversation where he's like, I just don't want the child psychologist to get their hands on my boy and twist him up even further and damage him even further. It shows a really interesting distrust of, you know, mental health. And, but it also points out that, you know, no matter how much he loves Tara and how much he loves Gemma, like when it comes to his boys, that's always going to be, you know, you don't get between him and the well-being of his sons ever. And I thought it was really interesting that he doesn't say for a moment, oh, well, my kid is 5 years old and is prone to forking himself. Instead, like, he actually approached it, like, he approaches all of his outlaw schemes and what's the angle? Who's the mark? And he's like, all right, why is my son busy poking holes in his arm and pinning it on his grandma? And then everything else falls into place. And he's like, holy mother of God. I have to, and he double checks everything and it's all over for Gemma.
Well, and I did like the idea that Wendy was like, look, you know, let me repay your help to me, you know, you're letting out the truth. Let me give you some truth.
Yeah.
And that was an interesting scene. I mean, I keep expecting them to kiss and it's nothing but like touches.
Well, yeah. And I still think of her, I still love him thing came out of nowhere. And I guess it's supposed to justify why she's around and suffering in silence or what have you. Mm-hmm. But, And I don't buy it. But, you know, the fact that Wendy is... What's always really striking about a lot of the characters in the show is how desperately they want to do the things that make them family.
Did yes. Go again? I think he did.
Yeah. You know what? I'm going to... I'm so long-winded. He'll be back on in a moment.
Right.
But you think about how many... You know, Lila tried to build a family with Opie because she really wanted that. And it was obvious she didn't have a very good one she came from. And Opie tried to build a family with Donna because that was his goal, was to be a functional dad and husband. And, you know, it's the same thing with Wendy, too. Almost, it's heartbreaking how many people on the show just want a decent family.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. So.
All right. So, now, yeah. The coolest part of this entire, well, I shouldn't say the coolest. It was the most action-packed. Was this jazz montage car chase.
I know. Yeah. I have to admit that when it comes to things like the car chases, the gun battles, I'm always kind of like, eh, whatever. You know, this is just action for keeping children's attention. But
it did feel a little kind of just like, we need something in here.
Yeah.
It's going to be a car chase because we haven't had anything with cars in a while. It's all been motorcycles.
Does Borofsky as the rat make sense to you guys?
Yeah, that was kind of my favored explanation.
Uh-huh.
And especially,
it's kind of less exciting than it being a betrayal, but it was kind of the one that made sense, right?
Uh-huh.
Especially in terms of somebody who would have had access to and worked with the Chinese, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Now, why do you think he was the rat?
Oh.
Because that's the thing I can't quite figure out, is what's the motive beyond simply he doesn't like Jax?
Oh. I guess just money. I mean, they mentioned that they paid him a ton of money. So. Yeah.
Well,
which is kind of boring, right? We'd rather it be personal than business.
But what's her face got killed? I mean, that was a huge turning point.
Yeah, his favorite hooker got killed. Yeah, Colette. That's right. So I don't know, you know, I would have liked to have seen Borofsky a little bit more angry or shaken by the fact that his actions killed somebody he considered a friend. Mm-hmm. But it does make, it makes a lot of sense now for why he killed that dude so quickly. Remember?
Right.
Like, that's shaky. Yeah. What is going on there?
Right. You didn't allow him to speak. Thus, he has he had something to say.
Exactly. Yeah. So the question, the big questions I have at the end of this episode, and we'll get to the stuff that was great and wrapped up in a moment, but here are the questions I have remaining. One, do we think Juice is dead, or do we think we're going to see him suffer more for the last two episodes? Are they going to give him the off-camera death, or are they, is he going to suffer some more? That's my first question.
I just watched it just before we came back on.
Uh-huh.
And there was something I caught that I didn't catch the other two times.
Uh-huh.
The two guards say, we are now on the Orient Express.
Yeah, that means they're paid off by the Chinese.
Yeah.
So that's what they're letting him know, is that the whatever money that the white supremacists are putting up is no longer enough.
I guess not.
So I'm curious to find out if Juice is going to be dead or if we're going to see Juice die. And to be honest, I hope they kill him off screen.
Really?
Yeah, I do. Because I feel like he's suffered enough, and I'd like to have him go out on that really strong madness scene that he had. And when you think about it with Hamlet, like, that's how Ophelia went out, too. You don't actually see that she dies. It's Gertrude who describes it later all. Yeah, Ophelia lost her mind. And while I watched, she drowned herself. So, you know, it would be sort of in keeping with the general theme of that show when they're like, yeah, well, Juice lost his mind, and then the Chinese had him killed for fun. So
we might see him in a musical montage, right?
Oh, my God, that would be great.
I feel like that's the style of the show, right?
Yeah.
You know, in the showers, in a pool of blood or something.
Yeah, and just like a foot or the back of his head or something. Yeah. So my next question is, what happens to Borofsky?
What's the answer, Tony?
So I'm thinking that dealing with Borofsky is like the next episode, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we've got two to go. I think the next one is going to be dealing with Borofsky, and like he's going to be somewhere hard to get, and they're going to have to do a plan, mm-hmm. and things are going to have to fit together, and maybe more people are going to get hurt along the way.
Yeah.
But trying to get to him is probably maybe what the rest of the club is dealing with while Jax is trying to find Gemma or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then the final episode is Indian Hills shows up, and we have an hour-long meeting with Indian Hills in live real action time with, you know, Robert's Rules of Order, you know.
Sorry.
That's what we deserve. And then a montage.
Well, I think it's interesting, the fact, and I didn't even... It didn't dawn on me until Rat said it,
mm-hmm.
and he actually said there could be a mayhem vote.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny that Rat's all legalistic all of a sudden.
And I guess it brought it, again, it was that whole idea of gravity, like, ooh, I mean, mm-hmm. we're all kind of in trouble here.
Oh, crap, there are consequences. Yeah, no, there's huge consequences for Jax, or there should be, because he killed somebody on BS logic, and... He can't even argue, well, to be fair, I'm out of my mind with grief for my wife. It was just basically, I shot a man in cold blood, and I lied about it to you all, and, oh, crap.
Now, what if Jax mm-hmm. completely stepped down, and they did a knife or burn on his tats, or blacked him out?
Oh, my gosh, like that first season episode?
Yeah,
oh, that was awful. And great, but...
I couldn't even imagine that smell.
Yeah, that's the first season was really dark that way when you think about it.
Yeah.
Cause it was really they did things like burn it, cut off people's testicles and burn things on their backs and so on and so forth. My sense is that Jax is a dead man walking.
I'm with you.
My sense is that what he's going to do is he and Wendy are going to have one last scene where there's lots of tears, and he basically says, take them out of Charming, get them away from this life and this legacy, here are my journals, this is how they can know me, and then viewers can wring their hands over, oh God, what if the cycle begins again? But he's going to be like, get the kids out of Charming, go, go, go now, because things are about to get really bad, and he gets his family out and safe, and once his family is safe... Like, he's completed what he views to be his moral obligation. He's still grieving for his wife, and he knows he screwed up the club, and he'll happily go to Indian Hills, or he'll go to, like, the little Model UN that the biker set up, and they'll be like, well, you know, you broke the rules. They reply to everyone, or else, what are we, lawless? And Jax will say, you're right, you need to kill me. And they'll be sobbing and weeping, and Jibs will be the one to do it, and that'll be it. And then Daytac Tar from Indian Hills becomes the new head of the whole Sons of Anarchy organization, and you see that Charming is a ruined kingdom, and the power is shifted.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, that's that's completely not out of the out of the loop.
Yeah,
I could also see Wendy taking the boys down to Neroville.
Yeah, because she's like, you know what, these people are lunatics. So the more I keep them away from. The more I keep them away from them in any way, shape, or form. So there's that possibility. And it also goes with her desperate wanting to forge a family and to have the support.
Yeah. I mean, so maybe. Because where else is she going to go? I mean, I mean, that seems like there's the only place to take the boys.
Yeah. I kind of hope we don't see Nero again. I hope that was it.
That would be, I think that would be strong.
Yeah.
And not bad. I thought that scene was great where we just see, where we're just seeing his reaction to, you know, whatever Jax is telling him. And, you know, that was very nicely done.
That was good, clutch, like, structure in the way it was edited down, where have to hear the whole thing all over again.
Yeah. Well, we had two scenes where he was really super strong, and the first was when he's talking to Gemma, and after she meanders a bit, and you get more of the psychology of Gemma Teller, you know, she admits that she killed Wendy, and now she's got to go, and his first he's just so overwhelmed that he begins jumping.
Yeah.
And I thought that was amazing, because you could tell that he had having this huge fight-or-flight instinct and an adrenaline surge, and he desperately wanted to hit something or somebody and was like, I can't do that, I can't do that. And just watching him master his feelings and bring up all this compassion for her was, you know, like, Nero is one of the big moral cores of the show, which is ironic because he's a pimp, but but I love...
Because you can't have a conscience in the pimp game.
Well, what's really weird is Gemma brings out the best in all of these men. Even as she, like, ruins their lives, she brings out the best of their characters. And then there was that scene with Jax and with Nero. And Jax has this gift for bringing out the father figure in all these guys, too. Because you think about all the guys through every season who give him advice and chivy him along the way and tell him what he has to do to be a better man. And Nero is just the latest in a long line, and Jax is listening to him. Like, Jax is so desperate for that father figure of some sort. And it kind of makes you wonder what the relationship was really like with John Teller. Because if Jax is feeling the lack of a father this acutely 20-odd years later, like, why is he? And they never really answered that question. Like, we never got a sense of what John was like as a father, just that he's not there anymore.
Well, how old was Jax supposedly when he died?
Teenager.
Really?
I think that was the take.
I never got that sense. For whatever reason, I just didn't. And as soon as Tony comes back.
Oh, is he gone again?
I think so.
Oh.
I think he's dying.
Oh.
My feeling is on, like, how Unser, who has now become all of a sudden the big balls of the whole situation.
Well, he finally got pushed beyond something that he can't explain away. We're talking about Gemma. Because there were also a couple really poignant moments in there. For example, the departure between her and Chucky, where he says very forlornly, you're my best friend. And she says very softly, I accept that.
Yeah.
And there's, of course, the departure between her and Nero and her and Abel. And the one moment that also got me was when she says goodbye to Thomas.
Yeah, that was a little...
That was a little, it made me tear up a little. Like, never mind the fact that, oh, she murdered his mother. You know, it made me, because you can tell that she, you know, at her heart fundamentally, she's always been happiest when she's holding a baby. And I can't imagine what it must feel like to hold a baby that you love so much and know it's going to be the last time ever.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
But it was her fault.
Yeah, I know. This is the thing about Katie Sagal's performance and the character Gemma is she's a monster. We've established this. She poisons everybody she touches. She's, you know, her just like Jax's big tragedy is that he wants to be a great father and he's never, ever going to be because he just doesn't know how. Like, her big tragedy is that her nurturing powers have been completely warped and perverted for selfish and insecure ends. But you know, I still root for her.
Yeah.
I want to believe that she can undo that damage or she can recognize it and stop doing it. And, it's never going to happen. I know it's never going to happen. And I'm still, oh, Gemma,
I'm rooting
for you, girl.
Do you think Unser kills her?
I don't think Unser can kill anybody, to be frank. I just don't. I'm sorry.
I'm telling you, I just feel like he's grown mm-hmm. into this big tough guy now that mm-hmm. he has some sort of leverage. You know,
because he knows he's going to die. He's
well,
just
he's
zero.
Unwinding too, right? I mean, he did kill
yeah,
someone
exactly.
the last episode, which he
and
had,
he was
and that
not
was,
happy
yeah,
about
he was
that.
Not.
Remember?
But like that set something off. Right now, he's like picking fights mm-hmm. with Jax and you know he's yeah. talking tough in a way that you know he never has even when he was you know.
What I'm wondering is if my desperate hope is that. He did not go Jax and put out the APB because he's like, this is the only way I can keep Jax from killing Gemma. Like, that's my hope, is that he's not doing it to protect Gemma, but that he's, like, legitimately angry and upset that...
That's what I think. I think he's trying to slow down whatever things were that he wasn't aware of. And he said yeah. blatantly, look, mm-hmm. if this goes south, I don't trust you. I don't do things for you.
Yeah.
And then it came back around and saying... You're done.
Mm-hmm.
Ah. He's gonna cause turmoil.
Yeah, Unser's a wild card,
yeah,
so we can add him to the list of questions.
Do you think
will
he live through the
on?
Next episode?
Speaking of law enforcement,
piss off the wrong person.
Mm-hmm. There's a very subtle but pretty much, you know, easily seen thing with Chibs
yeah.
and Jari.
Mm-hmm. And they keep asking Chibs, what's this with Jari? And Chibs is like, nothing. But no, that's not nothing.
Well, he was going to go lean in to kiss her.
Mm-hmm.
And nope. That check mark, nope.
Yeah.
I'm a part of the club, and I have to keep a distance.
Yeah. And she was, like, faking sleep while he did it, too, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, she was using the able eye close.
Yeah. Aww. Kid.
If they would just tell him to look down, it would at mm-hmm. least seem somewhat natural.
Yeah. You know what's funny is that actor also plays kids on Mad Men too, so it's not like he's not familiar with cameras, but
for real?
For real, yeah, he plays young Gene on Mad Men. Mm. Or he did. Perhaps they've aged up the kid after this point, but he was on that for a while. So anyway, so we have all those questions. Things that were resolved that were tremendously satisfying were, of course, looks like Gemma and Nero are off.
Probably.
And Nero sold his club, so sold his stake, so that's all done too. What I kind of love about this is how Alvarez has just quietly hung in there this whole time, and he makes one veiled reference to, well, Jax, you bring a lot of drama. But he's like, but in the end, I have a whorehouse. And that's pretty much it. All he had to do was kill his son in season one. But, you know, Alvarez is doing okay, man. He has managed to play the game correctly.
He got a sweet car in return for, mm-hmm. like, here, you can borrow my warehouse for a couple hours. It's got two yeah. card tables you can push together for a sad little meeting.
Oh, that was the worst, yeah. because they had, like, the chairs.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah. And the other thing, we know Lala's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Also, I love that she's a notary public. Oh my god, do I love that she's
great.
A notary public.
I was waiting for the joke about getting them notarized, and it's like, no, she will notarize them herself. She is a notary public. Of course she is.
That's the great... Well, I imagine it's super convenient, because you're like, you know, here we go. Thunk, thunk, witnessed. Mm-hmm.
Well, but, and the other thing is, we haven't seen her for a few episodes, so obviously yeah. she's been going to night school.
Hello?
I guess I just cut out.
I think you did, but you're back.
Okay, that's awesome.
Darn you, Skype. We haven't seen her a couple episodes, so for all we know, that's when she got her notary public license.
Right, I like so I figured she was at night school.
Yeah. No, but she's set up now. She's a businesswoman, and she seems to be a lot more confident and poised, and she's not scared and scrambling anymore. Like, Lila has a real sense of control over her life.
She turns down, you know, she has the option to be more involved in a less legitimate business, and she's not interested.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's good.
Yeah, no, and that's great. That's sort of a happy ending for Opie by proxy, too, because she's probably still raising his kids.
Yeah. So hopefully they don't get pulled back into the life, right?
Yeah, exactly. So that's a happy ending, and that's a wrap-up. I'm relieved that Gemma and Nero have broken up. It's nice that, frankly, Gemma has decided she's out of the boy's life, and it's just a question of whether or not her life ends in the next two. When you think about it, Tig basically got his happy ending last week.
True.
Was it last week? Yeah.
Yep.
So really, aside from the threads that we talked about earlier, all that's left for us to do is to see how things unspool for Jax and whether or not he's going to go to his grave with any measure of peace and whether or not this cycle perpetuates itself or, you know, he manages to break it and get his kids out of the life.
Yeah. This just occurred to me, and this would be the worst way to do this. If Abel has a friggin' Green Lantern moment with the ring, I'll write the show off.
Yeah, this is where you start throwing things. The worst thing that the show could possibly do at this point is Jax gets stabbed. Like, Mr. Mayhem comes, and as Jax is dying, there's like a heavenly vision of Tara come to greet him into the afterlife. And standing over her shoulder is John Teller's son! That would be the worst.
Thank you for creating a worse scenario than even I could imagine. That's a talent.
They've never really the closest they've come with the cheesy stuff was the end of season 5 when Jax is sitting at the table and Tara drapes herself over him diddly, 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 and you see it's Gemma and John.
Yeah. Let us show you this photo right behind in case you haven't been paying attention, you know.
Exactly, yeah.
Overboard.
Here is the hammer and here is your head. Do you get it? Do you get it? Do you get it? Do you get it? Do you get it?
Can you see us now?
But, yeah. Do you understand? Do you understand? But, no, I love this episode. You know, again, there are, of course, things where I'm like, you know, because there are always quibbles. Yeah. And, you know, in this age of entitled television consumerism, how could there not be?
I got angry every time Jax was like, I'll tell you later. And it's like, no, tell them now. You'll save so much time. And also, I'm not sure how much longer you're going to live. But, you know, it worked out. Yeah. They had to kind of build that for a while. But,
One of the best goofs is when Nero is all upset and he throws his phone down.
Yeah.
If you watch it multiple times, you'll notice he scratched off his tattoo slightly.
Oh, that's funny.
That's nitpicking.
Mm-hmm. That's symbolism. It means that he's out of the life. No, that's a mistake. I'm wondering if anything is unfortunate is going to happen to Chucky soon. It seems like he's due for some kind of tragedy, right?
I don't know. I think losing his best friend counts as tragedy.
That was it. He got punched in the face. We'll never see.
Yeah. But, you know, everybody's always hurting themselves for Gemma. Yeah. You know, again, that seems to be a theme. Yep.
But is Chucky – when did we get to that point where Chucky was that close with Gemma?
I mean, I think it's a one-way closeness, right? I mean, it's
yes, it is. That was
and
clearly
it's,
the.
It's kind of mirroring, like we're seeing the Unser over again, right? Yeah, I mean, because to a certain
that she has this talent for collecting lost men.
Because it's like I mean, I didn't really understand why that character hung around for more than a season.
Yeah,
but he's still there.
Powering down.
Yeah, but when you think about it, Gemma doesn't have that many female friends, so maybe technically speaking, Chucky's one of her best friends too.
I would, I could see that because, he does make that allusion. What was it, last episode or the episode prior to? He says, you can tell me things because that's where I'd gotten the idea that Chucky could have been a double agent.
Uh huh. Yeah. No. But no, he's not.
He's just lonely.
Yeah, very lonely.
There was a lot of blood in mouths over one punch solutions.
Yeah.
This episode. Like, a lot of blood for one-hit wonders.
A lot of blood for one-hit wonders is a very compelling composition.
It's what I do. Every once in a while, I'll wordsmith it out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. But what did you think about Jax just kind of unquestionably saying, yeah, my son said my mother killed my wife, and I absolutely believe him.
It felt a little forced, and maybe some of that is just, you know, there's only so many minutes left in the rest of the season. But I was willing to kind of believe it in that he it fit with all these other things that he had seen, and he knew what was going on.
Why were you willing to believe it? Tell us.
Can you hear me?
Thankfully, he's recording on his side.
Yes. Good.
And I can separate it.
Okay.
Damn. There he goes. Mm-hmm. He's going.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And he's back. Yeah. Yay. Oh,
internets. They're always great. Never bad.
Yeah.
I was willing to believe it. In the context of, like, he knew what Tara and Gemma's relationship was like, and that was kind of just hearing that, even though it was from the world's word out of the mouth of a child, kind of like that story suddenly fit together perfectly, right? Because he was kind of, and you know, and then he got a little bit more with the corroborating evidence where Unser told him, like, you know, that the guy that you think did it couldn't have possibly done it, but he was already, he was kind of on that train ready to go, even without that little piece, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, it didn't take much. And again, leading into the episode, we are shown clearly that he's been mulling it over the entire night.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he's sitting on the floor just kind of like, what the what?
Mm-hmm. Oof. I don't know if I have anything more on it necessarily.
No, because it was actually an episode.
A lot of questions more questions got answered than asked, and we'd been getting a lot of questions posed for like 9 episodes in a row, and now it's like, let me show you where these pieces fit together, and that's nice, right?
Yes, and it's also very different. Yeah. You're like, wait, what? I don't understand. What happened here?
I feel like usually I have a list of like 7 questions, and it's like, you know, I mean, I have some kind of curiosities, like how is this going to wrap up? But I don't have any. A lot of big things got answered, right? Because the big things were, who's the rat? And we know who that is now. We don't know necessarily what's the fallout from that going to be. And, you know, when is Jax going to find out about Gemma? Answer, now.
Yeah.
You know, and we don't know what the end result of all that will be, but those were the two, like, that's what's been hanging over the head for forever. And they answered them both in one episode.
Oh, I guess the other question I have, and really this is sort of for my own curiosity, is what's up with Rat and his girlfriend? Because I feel like there's a reason that they paid attention to the fact that, you know, they have this relationship and they're in love and all of that. And yet I also get the feeling that there's a shoe that's going to drop there.
I don't
well,
know.
I think the biggest shoe is going to be her mom has to be tied up at the end.
Yeah, because do you really think that they're going to do the thing with the homeless? She hasn't appeared yet this season, so, you know, there's room for her.
Well, she's not been a major character, obviously, but anybody who's been watching the show knows that, you know, look, your mom is not actually dead.
Yeah, I guess the question is why has she elected to be a, well, actually, they mentioned that her mom was mentally ill, too. So maybe that was it, but I would love to see what the explanation is for this. Like, what mother would elect to wander the streets completely batshit insane, pardon my language, for 15 years or 10 years or however long it's been, rather than, you know,
raise her kid. I'll go soap opera. It's amnesia.
I'm out.
Oh, please. If they do amnesia, that's when Tara appears at Jax's bedside to bodily assume him into heaven. That's a sign the show has gone too far.
I'm telling you.
Mm-hmm.
It's an easy solution.
Oh, it's a terrifying solution. But you're not wrong. It could happen. Anything could happen on the show.
Now, if they decide to do that. If they decide to do that.
Yeah. So I get the feeling that, like I said, and apologies to listeners, because at this point we may just be repeating ourselves. I get the feeling that what's left to wrap up putting aside the Jax and Gemma stuff for a minute, because that's obviously going to take another couple of episodes. What's left to wrap up is Chibs and Jerry. What's up with that? Rat and his girl. What's up with that? What happens to the kids? Will they find the rat, or does he actually get away? Does the club get crushed by Damon Pope's organization? Does the club get crushed by the Chinese because they're not too happy about being unfairly scapegoated? And then we get to the big ones, which is, does Jax meet Mr. Mayhem, and what happens between Jax and Gemma? Or does anything happen between Jax and Gemma? I mean, I think we're all pushing for a big, cathartic, dramatic final confrontation, but there might also be a certain perverse and elegant logic in Jax being like, I can't even talk to my mom about this, because if I do, it will end up with one of us dead.
It could. That would be interesting-ish to leave them completely on polar ends of the spectrum and not let them get near each other.
Yeah, and just have Gemma live her days in fear and have Jax, you know, die and be bodily assumed into heaven by Tara.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of want them to cross paths again, because they didn't get to this whole episode, right? She was on the run, and right. Now she's far away. And yes. It seems like there needs to be that confrontation. But I don't know. Maybe the whole idea will be that confrontation will be denied by his death.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know which one's better. They could both
it's
be good.
It's funny how we're all kind of rooting for Jax to die.
I mean, it seems inevitable, right?
It does.
I don't know. I mean, that was the whole thing. Yeah, I don't want to spoil the Shield, but there were lots of assumptions about who would or wouldn't die in Kurt Sutter's other show, The Shield. And In some ways it was surprising with who did and who didn't die. But it,
yeah. Oh God! The,
but it kind of
some of those deaths were just horrifying.
It kind of feels like that Jax isn't walking away from this, and nor should he necessarily. If this show is intended to teach us anything about humanity,
it's that mass murderers don't get the happy ending. Well, it's just like I can't feel too bad about Juice because let us not forget that he murdered a grieving mother, Darvini. He murdered his fellow club member when he was still in the business of being a rat.
True.
And he murdered Roosevelt.
Yep.
This is not a guy whose hands are clean. And, every time he was given an opportunity to make a choice that would have gotten him out of the situation, he doubled down and went deeper in. So, my sympathy for Juice is severely limited. I think he's tragic. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's the same thing as, oh, poor Juice, he doesn't... No, Juice deserves a lot of things. He probably does not deserve to be treated like an 18th century London whore every night, but,
Yeah, it was sad that he didn't... I mean, he probably could have improved his condition if he had told Jax a lot more before he went to jail, but clearly he needed to be pushed further, and he was kind of a coward, and... right?
Yeah, he was a coward, that's the thing.
So he had to walk closer to the edge of that cliff,
Yeah. I mean, I get the feeling that's why Tig, who, again, let us remember, has killed a lot of people, including Donna, including Damon Pope's daughter, which, precluded a whole lot of slaughter and complications, and countless others. I think this is one of the reasons that Tig actually gets something resembling a happy ending, is that he's learned to dig down and have some sort of level of courage. And in this case, it was the courage to love who he loved and be like, I really don't care what the rest of you people think. Venus is my be-all, end-all.
Why not just dissolve Sam Crow entirely? I mean, they don't even have a clubhouse at this point.
No! That's a good question.
Well, I mean, like, if I'm Indian Hills, it's like, you guys can't even be a charter anymore. Like, it's basically, you guys don't have enough people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's a good question. And I wonder if that actually comes up with their little,
their round table.
Their little Sons of Anarchy Model UN that they're going to have, so...
They're going to infrastructure them to death.
It's funny and amusing on one level. Oh, outlaws with bylaws and so on and so forth. But these guys have to have a mutually agreed upon code of conduct, or else nothing gets done.
That's right.
And there have to be really harsh consequences, or again, nothing gets done. So I'm for it. I fully buy into the fact that Indian Hills is going to throw the book at them. They should. I mean,
because they could get... You could conceivably have a montage at the end. Now, I'm not saying montage to wrap things up is good. I'm just saying you could have all of our surviving characters showing them in their new life.
Yeah, I would accept that.
Chibs is the janitor at the sheriff's office.
Oh, God, yeah, that's so depressing and yet so likely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, Tiggs maybe takes tickets at the, you know, the lingerie gay club.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean,
or maybe Tig is the bouncer and he's working for Alvarez.
There you go. Like there you go. Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to have a montage to show where they all end up. And at the end, there's Jax Teller's grave next to Opie's and next to Tara's. And on top of it, there are two rings and nobody knows how they got there. Well, Kurt Sutter loves those BS dramatic reactions. Yeah. Or perhaps the only shot we see of the homeless woman is when she puts rings on top of Jax's grave or something like that. And you're like, oh my God, it all meant something, you know? I could see them going in that direction, too.
Yeah.
That would work.
Yeah, it would.
I can handle it.
Yeah. But anyway, we've gone over an hour, and most of it has been spent saying, yeah, that was a great episode. So.
Right. I got some editing to do. That's not a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's wrap this one up, and we're off next week because apparently there's no Mayhem before Thanksgiving.
That sounds crazy.
I know. That's not. But what are family holidays if not an exercise in unstructured mayhem? And so we'll be returning the week after that. I think that makes it December 2nd. Yep. So expect a podcast on the 3rd or the 4th. And then so two more podcasts to go, 3 more weeks. Thanks again for listening, guys. I'm Lisa Schmeiser.
I'm Phil Moselak.
I'm Tony Sindelar.